for argument, United States v. Ray. Ms. Lindsay?
May it please the Court, Rose Lindsay for Keith Ray. I wanted to point out a couple facts that I see as significant and important in the determination of this issue. First of all, the district court tentatively accepted Mr. Ray's plea, specifying that the district court wanted to see how the pre-sentence report would calculate the guidelines before the court accepted the plea agreement. The sentence that Mr. Ray agreed to in his plea was a 263-month sentence. And that sentence, if we were to look at the guideline range that applied at the time that plea was negotiated, in other words, the anticipated guidelines range, that stipulated sentence of 263 months reflected a precise 10% off the low end of the guideline range. At the time of the plea, nothing in the plea specified that Mr. Ray would be precluded from seeking future relief under Section 3582C. So here, a question I raise for the court is, if we have a situation here with a defendant who is entering a plea agreement to a set sentence, we're talking about a criminal defendant. We're not talking about a commercial venture here. And so we're talking about the potential loss of significant liberty interests. Here we have a plea that does not explicitly preclude future relief under 3582C. And yet there's a contention by the government that because Mr. Ray entered into a plea to a set number, he should not be able to now receive the benefit of the lowered guidelines. But my concern about this position is that we can take two defendants similarly situated, Mr. Ray, who locked into the set number as he anticipated at the time of the plea, and there can be another defendant in the exact same situation with the same guidelines range, and yet for whatever reason, defendant number two could say, well, wait a minute, I'm just going to wait and see how the...
Well, of course, defendant number two might have gotten a much higher sentence.
That's true. That's
right?
True.
There's a trade-off. If you agree to a specific sentence, you're protected against the judge's exercise of discretion. You have to give up something to get that benefit, and what you give up is you give up the opportunity for the judge to exercise his discretion in your favor rather than the government's favor, right?
That is correct.
So now,
however,
what he's looking for is for the judge to exercise discretion in his favor.
That's correct, because if we look at the plain language of Section 3582C, we need to ask, if we look at it...
You're not going to get anywhere with the plain language of anything, because it's ambiguous. So forget plain language. The language of 3582C does not answer the question in this case.
Yeah, that is correct. That's why we're here.
Don't use the term like plain meaning, which implies that the answer is in the text, which it isn't.
So if we then, based on Your Honor's assessment that the plain language wouldn't work by itself, we then have to look at the broader context. We need to look at the interplay with Rule 11 and with Section 3582, the context of a criminal defendant who potentially will stay behind bars based on this interpretation of the statute or go home to his family a little bit sooner. And we can come to the conclusion that there can be a reasonable...
But this identically situated person that you want to compare him to, that person may end up with languishing in prison for much longer because the judge decided to disregard the recommendation of the prosecutor and give him a heavier sentence. So I don't see where... The asymmetry is built into the sentencing scheme. You can't get away from it.
I see that I'm getting into my rebuttal.
Your argument has got to be that the 263 months was derived by applying 10% to a number in the guidelines, and therefore, at this point, you can do the same thing to a modified guideline, even though that's not specified or even mentioned in the agreement. Isn't that right?
That's true, but the point there is that the agreement does not explicitly say you can't pursue this relief later on. It might preclude him from seeking.
It doesn't forbid it, but it doesn't authorize it.
Right. And that's why we have to go back to the language of 3582 and determine what that statute permits.
Would an argument be different if this sentence couldn't be derived from the guidelines?
Is Your Honor talking about a sentence such as based on a phone count rather than on the guidelines range? I'm not sure that I'm understanding the question correctly, Judge.
Well, what if you just look at the sentence and it's, 183 months and 20 days and 3 hours or something, and that's not, and it's, you can't find a guidelines range that it seems related to. So,
in a circumstance like that, that's why it's important to go back to the record and try to glean where that sentence came from.
That's awfully mushy. That's what you have to do in every case, try to figure out what the judge was thinking or how influenced he was by the guidelines range.
Well, in a case like this, when the judge reserved entering the plea because he wanted to make sure that before he accepted that agreement, the guidelines reflected a sentence that he thought was appropriate. In this particular case, there is a way to glean that the guidelines had some significant role in coming up with that number. And I think that's where the based on language is very significant from 3582, because that statute simply requires that the sentence be based on a guidelines range, and that range was subsequently lowered. There is a way here, if we construe it in this way, to give even Mr. Ray relief, though he didn't choose at the outset to just wait for the pre-sentence report to then lock into the sentence. I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lindsay. Mr. Getter?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Matthew Getter on behalf of the United States. When the parties entered into this 11C agreement in January of 2003, both parties understood that there were both risks and benefits that they were taking by entering into this agreement. The defendant received certain benefits. The benefits he received by entering into this agreement, as Your Honor pointed out during appellant's argument, is that he received protection from the discretion that could have been exercised by the district court had the agreement not been to a particular term of months or years. For instance, if the district court had found that the applicable guidelines were higher and there wasn't a specific number of months had been agreed upon, then the defendant could have been looking at more time. He was protected against that possibility by entering into an agreement to a specific number of months. Also,
wasn't the intent of the agreement to sentence him to 10% below the bottom guideline, isn't it? Is there anything wrong with looking at the intent of the agreement at this point? When you change the context, you change the numbers.
Your Honor, I think that the way to look at this is that the intent of the agreement was that the parties both decided that 263 months was a period of time that both were willing to accept.
Yeah, but that wasn't just a number they pulled out of the air. That was based on mathematics.
Well, I mean, that's accurate, Judge. If you're asking me to go beyond the record as to how this number was derived, certainly it is our practice to begin any negotiation of a plea agreement by looking at the relevant guidelines range and considering, in a case of a cooperator, what an appropriate percentage off would be. That being said, though, this went the extra step. Rather than deciding, okay, we'll give this guy 10% off the applicable guidelines range, both parties decided that there were certain risks they didn't want to assume and certain benefits they didn't want to give up, so they decided that instead of agreeing to a percentage off the guidelines range, they would agree to a specific term of months. And they both got what they bargained for.
Of course, you didn't add to that that this number would stand no matter what happened to them.
I'm sorry, Judge, I didn't hear.
I said you didn't add to that agreement a clause which said this number will stand no matter what adjustment may be made in the guideline.
Your Honor, I don't think that language is necessary in the plea agreement because under 11C1C or 11E1C at the time, the parties are bound by it. The district court is bound by it after it accepts the agreement. So there's really both parties have assumed the risk that if something changes in the meantime, whether it's during sentencing, before sentencing, or even after sentencing, the parties have gotten what they bargained for. So there really was no need, in light of the language of 11E1C, to put in such a clause like that.
I'd like to ask you this. His plea agreement includes a waiver of his right to appeal his sentence. Do you not consider this to be an appeal of his sentence, or is the government affirmatively waiving that waiver? Hello?
Your Honor, I heard the question, and to be quite frank with you, I had not even considered that. Honestly, I would need to do research on that to determine whether or not a 3582 proceeding would be something that would be outside the traditional appellate process such that a waiver would be considered enforceable. I know we did not make that argument, but, Judge, I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
If there being no more questions, then, Your Honor, we would ask that the Court affirm the District Court's denial of the 3582 motion.
Thank you very much, and thank you to Ms. Lindsay, and you were appointed, were you not? We thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client, and the Court will be in recess.